People in developing countries across the globe are breaking the cycle of poverty by gaining legal control of their land. It's all to do with land tenure, a political, economic, social, and legal structure that determines how individuals and groups access and use land and related sources, including trees, minerals, pasture, and water. Land tenure rules define how rights to use, control, and transfer land and resources are allocated within societies. So, land tenure makes an enormous difference to individuals, families, communities, and ultimately to the economy of the entire nation. Land tenure specialists point out that it also helps to address climate change issues, improve natural resource management, expand economic growth, improve food security and agricultural productivity, empower women, and limit conflict. I spoke to attorney and land tenure specialist Amanda Richardson, who was in Rome to participate in a speaker program organized by the US mission to the UN agencies in Rome. Amanda, who specializes in land law policy and women's rights, works for Landesa, a Seattle-based rural development institute that partners with governments to create laws, policies, and programs that provide secure land rights for the poorest. Founded over 40 years ago, Amanda explains that Landesa champions the power of land ownership and rights as the key to a better, safer future for the world's poorest people.
So I work for Landesa, which is an NGO based in Seattle in the U.S., and we work to secure land rights for the world's poorest. So that's people living on less than $2 a day. So I personally help to do research on different legal frameworks, and I also do field work in country, talking to people to find out what their situations are like, and then designing different pilot projects and helping to implement those.
When I think of land tenure and gender empowerment, mm-hmm. I think the two go together in a way. I think of Africa, I think of developing countries.
Yes, so in Landesa we focus on sub-Saharan Africa, India, and China, although we've focused on over 40 countries in our time since the 1960s. So it's developing countries, and we focus on chiefly rural populations.
Why are land rights important, and why is involving women important?
Land rights are important because people who are landless tend to be the most vulnerable people. They're people who don't have generally power over necessarily where they live, where they can work, power over where their next paycheck is coming from. And if they do live and work on land that they don't have secure rights to, they tend to lack power to make decisions about that land and to make investments in the land, both short-term investments like fertilizers and long-term investments like digging a well, so they can't use the land most productively. And then they have no security that they'll be able to stay on the land. So when there's pressure on the land from all sorts of things like rising land prices or conflict, they tend to be the people who lose their rights to access the land first. So they're vulnerable to all sorts of pressures.
So how do you go about securing rights to, I'd say, such a wide-ranging variety of people in different countries?
We tend to be invited in by governments. Our goal is always to do things that are scalable at the national level. So to work to reform the laws and different policies that affect people's land rights. So in India, for instance, there's a program that different state governments, that's the level that land is actually governed at. So different state governments have programs to distribute land to landless people. So we worked with them to try to figure out what the optimal size was for the land they were distributing. So we gave them advice on that, and then we helped them with a pilot project to see how that would work, how they could give out the land, how they could title the land in the name of the women, and how to do that in a way that made the rights real for the people. And then the government could take the research that we'd done and the assistance we'd given and scale it up at a broader level. So that's how we tend to try to work in different countries.
So generally, are you invited by a government?
Historically, that's how we've worked. Now we also do some work with USAID and other projects, so we might be invited in by an NGO or the U.S. government to help and to give advice about land and about gender.
So basically you are focusing on communities, I understand, and on giving poor communities the possibility of developing. You're trying to give them a just access to basic rights.
Well, first I'd say we don't quite focus on just communities. Okay. We focus on a community level, especially on making sure that rights are real for people at the community level, so that once they have rights to the land, it's recognized by the community. But we're also talking about a household level of giving people rights to land, ownership of land sometimes. And we're also talking about an individual level, making sure that we look within the family to make sure that both the woman and the man, both heads of the household, are benefiting from those rights. So it's not just at the community level.
Is there an example you can give us of, let's say, a happy ending story, somewhere you went into and you assessed the situation and you made a plan and you are now seeing the results of your work?
Well, I'd say the work that's been done in India, we've seen that the micropot program is what it's called. Micropot. So micropots are small plots of land less than a quarter of an acre. And it's what the governments of the states that we've been working in have been giving out to landless people. So in a lot of Indian states, there's a cap on how much land an individual can own. So there's a lot of land that the government has. So they are looking for a way to give that land out to landless people. And one way they're doing that is through this microplot program, where they give out small plots of land that allow the families who receive them to start becoming more independent financially and also getting some dietary diversity, growing things like vegetables on the land. So 11 states across India have allocated 210,000 microplots to families through both land purchase programs and then other microplot programs like what I was talking about, where they already have the land. And we found that families do tend to start growing things like vegetables to increase dietary diversity. They also start growing things like teak trees to make an investment in their future. Those take 10 years to mature. So we found that families having the secure rights to the land means that they're able to make those kinds of investments in the land.
And of course, this kind of benefit reaches much further.
Right.
It benefits the economy of the whole nation.
Yes, it goes from the families to the communities to the nation as a whole.
What about Africa?
In Africa, we've done a number of programs. One program that was particularly successful is something called the Justice Project that we did in Kenya, which was designed to actually increase women's access to their new rights under the new 2010 constitution in Kenya, which is quite egalitarian and increases women's rights and their rights to land specifically. So we had a project there that was to help the community help women to access justice in terms of accessing land. Oh, so we did trainings. We went in and we trained the elders first on what their rights and responsibilities were under the Constitution, because they're the traditional justice actors. And then we trained them on what it said about land in the Constitution, what it said about women's rights, how they could go about improving both of those things. Then we trained teachers and youth in the schools to have them disseminate the information about the Constitution to the community as a whole. And then finally, we gave training to women to improve both their understanding of what the Constitution said and also their public speaking. And what we found is that doing it in this way has empowered the whole community. The elders have become big champions of land rights and of women's land rights particularly. And the community as a whole has sort of bought into the whole idea, and women are seeing an increased access to land and increased decision-making over both what crops are grown and what to do with the income. And what we found in other studies is that when women have that increased decision-making power, they tend to use that food and the money and spend it on the family and invest in the family, because they're the ones who tend to have primary responsibility for the children and for household needs.
How are you received when you go into a community and you start doing this kind of work?
Well, we try not to just go into a community, right? So we always start from a research level, going in to the area where we might want to work and seeing what the situation is like for people on the ground. So not just understanding what the legal framework is at the higher level, but understanding how it works for people, understanding what the community's norms are, understanding what maybe the customary law is and how that interacts with the formal law. So trying to really understand what the context is on the ground. And so from there, we might start engaging, but we try to do it in a way that is sensitive to the community. So, for instance, we have a project in India called the Security for Girls Through Land Project, where we were hoping to reduce the incidence of early marriage, which is tied to dowry, because dowry is less for girls who are younger. So the poor families are able to marry their girls off if they marry them off younger, because they don't have to pay as much dowry. So we were hoping to find a way to maybe eliminate the practice of giving dowry. But what we found was, by going into the community, engaging in conversations with the community, that that wasn't something that was necessarily feasible. So we talked with the community to come up with a new way of approaching the problem, which was to try to get people to put some of the dowry as an asset in the name of their daughters, both to give the daughters status within their new family, give them increased decision-making power, which benefits the family, and then also to give them some sort of fallback position in case something went wrong in their new family and they ended up having to be on their own. So what we found was that by engaging the community, we were able to not be just people coming in and trying to push our own ideas on the community, but using the community to come up with a feasible solution.
How long have you been involved in this kind of work, Amanda?
So I started at Landesa in 2010 as a recipient of the inaugural Fellowship for Women's Land Rights, and then I became a land tenure specialist in 2012.
Why do you do it? What is your motivation?
I've always been interested in, justice, and especially for the poor, trying to bring people up out of poverty. Land rights are a particularly interesting way to do this because they provide sort of a basis for almost all other work that you could do in rural areas. For instance, microcredit is an interesting area, but if you don't have land from which to do things like start a business or invest in inputs for your land, it's sort of the loan itself is not very useful. So I feel like land is this basic thing that allows us to build up and help people get out of poverty.
Is it gratifying for you? Have you seen positive development?
It is. It's really, I personally love going out into the field and speaking with women, and especially getting to go back to projects as they progress and hear stories from women about how they've gone from living in total poverty to having some extra income or extra food for their families, seeing how their children are prospering from that. It's great.
And women really are the key to a healthy community.
They really are the key to healthy families, healthy communities, healthy economies.